Welcome to Local Music Somewhere, where your voice is always heard on our Beats radio and media streaming service for today's hot and trending topics. Now let's get into it.
Hello, this is Terry Hudson. I'm a speaker, author, and I work with recording artists and creatives in general, empowering them on how their art works and how the marketing for that art works. And today in our studio, our guest is Ryan Cunningham. Ryan has been an A&R. He has worked in publishing. He has worked in artist management. He's even authored a children's book that you can find on Amazon. I believe it's called Dash the Dinner Time Cheetah.
Yeah, that is great.
And will you welcome Ryan? Welcome to our show, Ryan.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting the children's book shout out, but thank you for that. Thank you guys.
That's pretty cool. You know, you haven't written your book and have it on there as well, but I see so many how-to things from you that it kind of surprised me that you wrote a children's book. So what even brought that on before we get into anything else?
Yeah, I won't say where I was. I was sitting in an establishment that there's a lot of happy, it's the happiest place on earth, I'll say that. Was sitting there and talking to some different people and noticed this one kid just like what was like a super picky eater and having a difficult time at his table. And you know, he had this pet cheetah that he was like holding on to, and I was like, man, just what if this cheetah was the reason that he was eating, and like if he didn't, the cheetah would be upset. So that's just kind of how it came up.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you're here with us today from Nashville. You're not actually in the studio with me, and even though you're in Nashville, this is a little bit different interview for me because unlike a lot of the people that I interview, I actually know you really, really well. And you actually got your start with me. Let's talk about that a moment. Do you even remember that first interview?
Yeah, I remember you didn't like me at all. That's what I remember from that first interview. at least I thought that because you didn't want somebody to work with you, apparently.
I didn't know they were going to, you know, have enough work for me that I would need an assistant. And you became way, way more than that. But that's kind of how it started.
Yeah.
Was I that rough in the interview?
No, it wasn't bad. You just didn't say very much. I just thought you didn't like me from that. But no, it was good. You know, I definitely appreciate you giving me that first opportunity. And like you said, started out in that assistant role and kind of moved into A&R and some other functions with the label. And, you know, I definitely wouldn't be here if I didn't get that first start. So I appreciate that. And of course, appreciate you and all of your mentorship and guidance and things. It's always been great.
It started off that way. It started off that me mentoring you, but then you kind of brought me out of the dark ages because you know, I was in, got my career. A big part of it was before things changed so much, of course, with the internet and with apps and with just so many different platforms for artists to be able to kind of take more control of their careers. And it became a great age, but back then some of it was new to me, and where I had a lot of naysayers and even, you know, people in my own family that would make fun of me, like I was using my iPhone like it was 1984, and I even had Pac-Man on it at the time. You were the one that helped me come through a lot of that and inspired me to learn so much and change so much, and that's what brought us into where everything is happening today. So I credit you with that for sure.
Yeah, well, like I said, I just appreciate that first opportunity. It was a good time. You know, the label was good. I think we were able to accomplish some good things while we were there and while it lasted. You know, it was a good start, good starting point.
About that, as we were able to see artists before they actually, I guess, got their start. You know, some of them we saw in the very beginning, and then they ended up doing really well over time, and we learned even more about patience in this new age. But the biggest things was they had more control over their careers. And during that time, this is something that still happens today. We'll talk more about in a little bit. They all think they need a manager in the beginning, and we'll get into that. But what you did is when we got you, you know, you got in Nashville, and I remember one of our first plans was like, okay, just get a regular job, whatever it is, and then we're working to break in more in the music industry. You never did that. For like from day one, you just went to work in the music industry, and you haven't stopped. And you've been involved in some really great things, like publishing, like we said, A&R, You've seen the event side. You've also been involved in booking, which is probably one of the hardest things in the entire industry. But you were doing that really well as well. And of course, you know, the artist management side, and you got the best artist management company name that I've seen. So let's talk about your journey. Let's talk about the management company first. We'll go through that.
Yeah, as you mentioned the name, you know, that kind of came to me. I was trying to think of, you know, I was starting to manage an artist, and I was trying to think, well, what, got to have a company name. It can't just be Ryan Cunningham, you know, managing this artist. So it needs to be a company name to make it feel, you know, more legit at the time. And sitting in bed, and like I woke up in the middle of the night and was like, oh, you know, Music Row Management would be a great name for a management company. And I was like, surely that's taken.
Best name. It's not just a good name. It's the best name. Music Row is such a big part of Nashville and, you know, the history and all. And for you to get that name and nobody else having had the social media or the website or anything at the time was crazy.
Nobody had the LLC or anything like that. So I immediately went and, like, you know, got the rights to the LLC, to all the social channels, had all that. So it was, you know, it was one of those things that I couldn't believe that it was available, like I said, but it was great. And then, you know, that really helped in managing some artists as far as telling them, you know, hey, working with Music Row Management, and people just assume that it's been around for a long time. But it hadn't at the time. You know, it's been around now for a while. I guess I started that in 2015, 2016, somewhere around there. So it's been around for a few years now, but at the time it hadn't. And people just assumed that it had been around for, you know, 30, 40 years just because of the name.
Well, I want to talk to you about the publishing side. I know you did some things involved in that, songwriting and publishing, and let's go through your journey with that and what you were involved in.
Yeah, a couple different things in that arena, you know, dealing with songwriters. First one was, you know, working over at a company called Banner Music. It's a publishing company here in town. They also, at the time I was working there, was doing, you know, a lot of artist management as well, so kind of helped on the artist management side, but also, you know, functioned some on the publishing side, setting up some co-writes, helping to pitch catalog, things like that. Really just listening to the songs that the writers were turning in, seeing who might be a good fit for the co-writing side of things. But then also later on in my career, got to end up being the director of membership and songwriter relations over at NSAI, which is the Nashville Songwriters Association International.
We have a chapter in Charlotte. Yeah.
Yeah, you guys have a chapter there. They have chapters, you know, all over the place. And it's a great organization for anyone that is, you know, maybe wanting to learn about songwriting, wanting to start to be a songwriter. It's also a great organization all the way up for the pro writers. You know, they have a lot of pro members as well, and they do a lot of great advocacy work in Washington, D.C. when it comes to protecting the rights of songwriters and making sure they're getting paid, things like that. So in that role, really, I was working with a lot of songwriters, helping them to develop. I worked with a lot of songwriters that were maybe a little closer to getting a publishing deal and tried to help connect them with different publishers in town. And then also a function of my job there was to make sure all the publishers in town were connected with NSAI, staying up to date on what they were doing, being involved in our programming, things like that. So it was a really great experience. Got to work with all the publishers in town, but also got to work with just a ton of songwriters. And again, you know, like you said earlier, whenever we were at Oak Hill, got to see a lot of songwriters in those early stages, you know, a lot of ones that were starting out, first coming to town, really didn't know how the industry side of it works. Because that's the thing that I noticed when I was at NSAI is that a lot of songwriters, you know, that come there really, they might know a lot about the craft of songwriting, which they obviously need. And then they learn more about that as they're in that organization. But the thing that they really, really need more information on, you know, just more education on, is the business side of how, you know, songwriting works, and, you know, connecting to publishers, why you should co-write, dealing with, you know, PROs and things like that. Like there's a lot of different things that I realized on the business side they maybe didn't understand as much. So that's where I enjoyed.
Foreign, like, you know, are the foreign organizations, you know, when they're trying to have their songs overseas, and knowing how that works differently than the United States. And there's just so many avenues for songwriters now that have just come, you know, into play in the last few years. You have things with video games, and of course, you know, the NFT stuff, of course, the the movie soundtracks you have, writing for corporate events. It's not just writing for artists anymore. There's so many ways to get your material out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways, and I feel like a lot of writers, obviously, you know, they focus on, I gotta get that radio hit, need to get that number one song, but there's a lot of ways for songwriters to make, as you're saying, to make money off of their songs. It's just, they gotta be a little creative and think a little outside the box. There's also a lot of great, you know, work for hire opportunities now, you know, through companies like Songfinch is one that I can think of off the top of my head.
Songfinch, yes.
You know, that's doing sort of a work for hire model where you're writing a song. It's, you don't own the publishing or anything like that, but you're paid for writing that song. A lot of those opportunities out there. So,
and now you're A&R of country music for a company called One RPM, and that's a very important company for artists to know about. And I would like you to spend some time just saying more about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, as you said, do A&R mainly for country music. I have signed some artists that aren't in the country world. Got a couple of pop and rock artists as well, but mainly my focus is on country and just Nashville in general. One RPM is a global company, so we have, I think, 40 something offices in 20 or 30 different countries now. So it's definitely become a global organization, which is great. We span all different genres of music. You know, we have several different offices here in the U.S. with Nashville being one, but we have Atlanta, Miami, New York, L.A., and San Francisco as well. But really, the great thing about One RPM is that we're able to function as sort of a modern label that helps artists to distribute their music, of course, but can also do a lot of label services. We have deals that range from, you know, a full label deal where we're providing, basically acting as what a major label would do for the artist, all the way down to a simple distribution deal where maybe we're just pitching the music to DSPs and things like that, which is important for playlisting. But the great thing about One RPM is that we're able to service the artist at a lot better margin for the artist, and it allows the artist to still have ownership of their music in 99% of the time. So that's a big thing, because a lot of artists, you know, they want to focus on the major label, but they don't really understand what that means to them as far as what they're giving up and everything. You know, obviously their major labels do a great job, you know, especially with radio, things like that, and there's still some great benefits of being there. But a company like One RPM, you know, we're able to really help service a lot of those artists in a way that a major isn't, you know, while still allowing them to have a ton of control and allow them to have ownership in their music still.
Yeah, and you know, one of the reasons I do the show, and of course Jess and Jen and the other people here that we interview people, we're trying to educate artists as well as draw attention to them that how much control they actually have now. And it's not like, you know, when I was first getting into this, where you had all these gatekeepers, and if you didn't go through that, you didn't have a shot of anything. But now you have so many things at your disposal that you can be the artist you need to be in the way that you want to be if you have the right entrepreneurial spirit. But the key to that is knowledge. It's education and understanding how all of these things work. And just like you're talking about the major label is a great thing in the right circumstance, but it can be a horrible thing in the wrong circumstance. And you may sign the deal and your album never come out. Or it comes out and, you know, you might have one single from it and that's it. And they still market in an old way where they're still marketing full albums a lot of times and instead of singles and, you know, four or five ways to do that. And it moves sometimes a little bit slower. But they have the money to make the mistakes. Where a lot of independent artists coming up, you don't have that kind of budget to make the kind of mistakes that a major label can make and get away with it because they're so well funded.
Right. And also a lot of times in the majors, you know, they are able to make those mistakes because they have, you know, one or two artists typically on their roster that are paying really for all the other mistakes that are happening. So they're able to take some chances there and spend the money. But again, like you said, it really does take away a lot of the control, you know, coming coming to a company like 1RPM, if an artist signs here, you know, no matter what type of deal it is, typically, you know, they're going to have control over, you know, when they're releasing, you know, what songs they're releasing, things like that. And really we work with them to figure out what's the best cadence for music to come out. You know, what's the best strategy for if you have this album? Okay, we know we can pitch a certain number of songs out of this album. We know, you know, let's figure out the timeline of what that is, the release of each single, and then when is the album going to drop with the focus track, things like that. So there's a lot that goes into it. We're really able to be more hands-on with the artist and not just have them feel like they're just sitting there on the shelf.
So it's not just learning your craft and going to play at all the open mics.
No.
It's actually understanding the business and becoming good at that.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I want to talk in our second part here, because I'll get to that in a minute, but I heard somebody just recently on social media say, which is so true, the music industry is not one industry. It's three industries. It's the touring industry, it's the record industry, and then it's the, the touring industry, the record industry, and also the publishing industry. And they are three separate industries. They operate differently, and with having worked in all of those, it makes you the perfect artist manager, I feel, because you have knowledge of all the business, you know, inner workings of each one, and you're able to know how to be strategic for that artist and navigate these waters. So I do want to talk more about that in our second part here and talk about how that affects an artist as to when you need an artist manager. And so we'll do that in just a moment. But first, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to hear from a word from our friends and family and our sponsors. And so we'll be right back. And we're back here with Mr. Ryan L. Cunningham.
Yeah, thank you guys for doing the L in there.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the biggest questions that I get, and I know you get all the time, and we recently, sometime last year, taught a seminar together at Jambox, which is a great place for artists to rehearse. And we taught a thing called Jambox Sessions, and we discussed a lot of what it takes for an independent artist, and so many of those are looking for managers. When do you think an artist needs a manager?
Yeah, I think the sort of simple generalized answer is that when they have something to manage, because, you know, as you said, there's a lot of different things that go into it. And if you're an artist that is trying to find a manager, I think one, understanding what you want that manager to do, what you need them to do, how they would function is a big piece, but then also understanding how is this manager going to make money from me as an artist? Because right. If there's not a lot for them to manage, and there's not at least some revenue coming in to where their job is obviously to come in and try to enhance what you're doing. But if there's not already a little bit of that groundwork, it's going to be hard to find a manager that's going to want to take the time to do that. And then you get into situations where, you know, there's obviously all kinds of different management styles, management contracts out there, that kind of thing. But you want to have some kind of leverage to where you're not having to go in and then somebody's asking you for a retainer or something like that. I mean, obviously there are situations where that happens, but a lot of times, like, for you to have a manager, you want to make sure that you're generating some revenue. There's something going on. There's something, some sort of things bubbling up to where that manager can actually come in, effectively manage those things, and then also enhance what you're doing to make you more money. But obviously they're gonna take a piece of that.
Yeah, and you know, the artist manager, he actually creates demand and creates even more demand for the revenue streams. I think a lot of artists, in fact, I don't think it, I know it because I've seen it over and over, they confuse a manager with a booking agent. And while I know some perform that task, they're two totally different things.
Yeah, they are two totally different things. You know, hopefully, obviously managers are going to be able to supplement some shows here and there. But you don't want your manager to be solely focusing on booking, because then they're not able to focus on other opportunities, you know, that should be out there. Ideally, you know, you want to hopefully have someone that is handling some booking full time, whether it's a booking agent or somebody that is just able to make some of those initial cold calls for you, things like that. And because that can become a daunting task. And if you have a manager that is just solely focused on I'm booking all the time, that can tie up things to where they're not seeing the bigger picture. They're not able to work in some things like, you know, an appearance here or radio performance or, you know, what are we doing with the music? You know, do we have everything lined up for these shows and the shows that we do have lined up? You know, what opportunities do we have around that in that town to make sure that the artist is, you know, maximizing their presence in that market so that, you know, next time you go back, we can be in front of a bigger audience, you know, get more money from the venue, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of, that is a good thing, you know, to bring up is like, there's definitely, you don't, in an ideal world, yes, your manager is going to help with some bookings, but you don't want them to function solely as your booking agent because then they're going to be missing out on some other opportunities that are out there for you.
Right. And, you know, you want to go on talent sometimes because you go see these artists, and I know we've both done this. We'll go see an artist, and we just love what they're doing. You know, they're so incredible on stage, and you're caught up in that moment. That's just a part of it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a smaller part than artists think. You got to have that substance, but it's not just about how well you sing or how well you play your instrument, because we've seen plenty of people do that, and then writing is a large part of that, you know, depending on the genre, but primarily writing's a large part of that. And then of course the business side, do you get that same feeling when you go see an artist and you're like, wow, this is something the world needs to see, but they don't have the other pieces of that put together?
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately or fortunately, either way, it does happen quite a bit where, you know, we'll go see an artist or, you know, artist will send us a great song or something like that. It happens the opposite way too, where there's something about them that you just fall in love with. And it's like, this is amazing. You know, let's see what else they have going on. Let's dive into all the other pieces, especially if it's that live show. You know, if the live show is great, they sound amazing, they have that great stage presence, all that. And then going to dive into what else they have going on. And sometimes there's not a lot else happening. So then it becomes a question of, is the artist special enough to take the time to develop all those other pieces with them? Or is there another artist that maybe is a little bit further along that might be the right fit for right now, but let's keep an eye on this other artist to see where they're at, you know? I always love the artists that you can find in that early stage to try to help them develop, try to help them grow. I think that's where a lot of the magic in the industry is, you know, finding an artist that, you know, maybe it is a little early in some aspects, but, you know, they've just got that incredible talent, or there's something about them that is just really standing out, whether it's the singing, whether it's the songwriting, you know, the live show, whatever it might be. There's something
that's tenacity really to never give up.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big part of it.
We know of an artist, not to interrupt you, but we know of an artist. We went to see it, a little tiny place up there. We saw him in their very beginning. We heard him on a independent radio show, and we see them get to Nashville, and it was like their dreams kept getting crushed, you know, one time after another. But I think it took about 5 years and they finally made it. I mean, they had a huge hit song out.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It just sometimes it can take that, and you have to have that tenacity.
Yeah. Cause there's going to be, you know, there's going to be a lot more no's than there are going to be yeses. And there's a ton of people that are out there trying to do the same thing, you know? And it's kind of an interesting industry, and the fact of if you're an artist specifically, it's kind of interesting because, you know, everyone feels like they can at least sing a little bit, or they can go do a live show, or they can do that kind of thing, or they can, you know, maybe write a song that sounds decent, that kind of thing. It's like there's a ton of people trying to do it, and there's a ton of people though that end up moving to a place like Nashville, LA, New York, Atlanta, you know, Miami, like all these different places, with the hopes that they're going to make it big, and it's going to be really fast, and it's going to be quick, but it is a long journey. It's a long road to get from the beginning to, you know, sort of that peak. It can take a long time to get there, and it really is the ones that last and stick out. And, you know, I was in a general assembly meeting for an organization that I was a part of for a long time and on the board, an executive board of for a long time, called Solid. It was in a general assembly meeting for them, and they had a top executive in town come in and talk to us. And the first thing he said was, you know, look to the person to your left, look to the person to your right. And and say bye to both of them, because, you know, the chances of all three of you being here still in this industry in 5 years is pretty slim. Now, that was just the people on the business side. And you got to imagine that really does carry over to the artist side as well, because there's so much that goes on. There's so much that happens. Life changes, you know, life comes at you pretty fast. And it's a hard industry if you don't really love it and don't want to be in it and don't really want to push.
Have that flexibility.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, is the artist, you know, you have to want it more than anyone else on your team. As a manager or as an A&R, you know, booking agent, whoever it is that's working with you, they can't want it more than you do, because it's your career. You're the one that has to be willing to, you know, get up at 3 a.m. to go do a radio interview, you know, drive 12 hours to go to a show, and then, you know, drive six more after that show to go to the next show and all this stuff. So you've got to be willing to do those things. It's not really the most glamorous life a lot of times, yeah. but it is rewarding in a lot of ways. So,
and there are some great glamour moments. I mean, there are some high times and fun times, like you know, going to CMA Awards or the, you know, many events, CMA Fest, and the things that you do. That's pretty cool, and those are glamorous moments. But you know, they're not every day, for sure. It is a business. Correct. Now they do this thing with the show where we play different games, and we have one that we'd like to. I guess it would sort of be a game. If you have time, I'm going to spring some things on you. Normally we wait until the very end for this, but I really feel that the conversation we're having, that this would add right into it. You know, it'd be part of what we're doing. So we call these the Quick Five. Are you ready to play the Quick Five?
I'm ready. Let's go.
Okay. Can I have my first question, please? Here you go, Ryan. And you don't have any lifelines?
No lifelines.
I'm your lifeline. How do you confront a talented artist that needs to change genres to break through?
Ooh, that is a tough one. You know, we do run into this occasionally, especially, you know, especially in country. You know, country is, the great thing about country is that it's become such a wide genre. The difficult part about it is that there are some, obviously some traditional standards and things that people want to hear as country still. So it is tough to have that conversation. I think really the way to approach it is to try not to do the hard launch into, you know, let's just go ahead and dive in. I think in Nashville, you know, specifically with the way that we do demos and things like that, the way that we have artists are constantly writing. I think just talking to them about the idea and saying, you know, a lot of your stuff is leaning more this way. You know, we feel like you should try a couple of songs, maybe try to write a couple of songs. Let's do a couple of demos. Let's test it out, see how it feels. And that way you have a chance to let them hear their voice, let them hear their production, let them hear everything, you know, coming from them. Cause that's the hardest thing to do. And I tell songwriters all the time, this kind of folds into it. It'll seem like I'm going on a completely different street, but it'll come back. I promise.
That's a great answer.
Tell songwriters all the time that, you know, if you're writing with an artist, make sure the artist does the work tape, make sure the artist does the demo. And there's a reason for that, is so that the artist, as they're listening for songs that they're going to be doing later on, they can hear their voice on it and not have to have the barrier of hearing someone else's voice on it. So I would say the same thing is true if you're trying to get an artist to change a genre, is, you know, hey, let's try a couple songs in this other genre. Let's hear a work tape, let's do a demo and see how it feels. And that way they can actually hear themselves in that other genre.
Very informative. Question number two. What avenues should an artist with a budding portfolio absolutely use?
Budding portfolio on the, as far as like songs they've been releasing or what?
Yes.
What part? Okay. Obviously, I think if you get to a point and you're an artist, you get to a point where you're having some success with some of your releases, I think depending on which company you're using to get your music out there is a big thing. Like I said, obviously, if you're an artist that's using, let's say, like one of the DIY sort of distribution platforms like a TuneCore, CD Baby, DistroKid, and you start having some traction, I think then obviously it's time to start talking to, you know, a company like 1RPM that has the ability to help you grow. There's also some advantages of, you know, some of those companies are not designed for you to talk to anybody really, because it's a DIY distribution platform. But having a relationship with someone that is helping you get your music out there, helping you just take that next level as far as strategy for your releases, being able to pitch the music to all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple, Pandora, all that kind of thing, that makes a big difference, because when you're at one of those other three that I just mentioned, nobody's really pitching those for you. There's maybe a few examples where they are, a few instances where they are, but for the most part, no one's really pitching it for you. So if you get to a point where you start to see some success, start to see some things growing, I think that's probably one of the first steps, is to figure out who can I partner with to help distribute my music? Who can I partner with to help me in marketing some of this and come up with a better strategy for what I'm doing? Basically, who can help throw some gas on the fire?
Absolutely.
That would be one of the things. And then the other thing, obviously, is like social media is, you know, an artist's best friend these days, doing that kind of thing.
What's the number one discovery tool right now on social media?
For discovery, I would say it's probably TikTok on the discovery end. YouTube is obviously a big thing globally, because it's free, it's available everywhere. A lot of people don't realize the power that YouTube has on the streaming side and also the social side. A lot of people are using that. But as far as discovery goes, I would say TikTok. Now the thing there is figure out, how do I turn that person that just watched this short video of me, how do I get them to do something else to interact with me and stick with me? Because that's the hard part with an app like that, is that a lot of times it's really quick. The attention span short. It's built to be that way. But trying to get people to buy into it, that's really the key.
Okay. And question three is, this is going to be a good one. Ready? What open mic and songwriter venues make up the Nashville circuit? Considering for an artist wanting to try their luck in Nashville and have a chance at being heard by industry gurus?
Yeah, this is a good question. I would say we don't see a ton of the open mic concept in Nashville. What we see more of is what's referred to as a writer's round, where you'd have a couple of different songwriters up on stage at the same time. They're each playing, you know, 3 to 4 songs, or however many songs they're playing based on how long their round is. And obviously for those, it can be different. There can be different ways of getting in on those. One would be to write with, you know, obviously co-writing is a big thing. Try to write with some artists that are playing some of those shows. Then most of the time they're one writer is booking it, and then they're inviting other writers to fill out the round. But some of those venues, be like Commodore Grill, in Nashville is a good one for
we just had an artist on here that played there.
Yeah, it's a good venue for that kind of thing.
RB staff here has visited.
Nice.
So they wrote an article that they can find on rbeats.com.
I would definitely encourage people to check that out, because it's a great venue. There used to be an amazing one in town called Belcourt Taps that was really great for access for songwriters, but that one actually went away recently. There's a venue called The Local in town that's not far from the Commodore Grill. That's a good one to reach out to. And then working your way up to something like The Listening Room, which typically they're gonna do writers that are a little more established, a little bit, have been doing it for a little bit longer. But some venues.
Yeah, we saw one writer there together, and it was like the 2 years after that, he had number one songs, and he was, I think last time I saw him, he was touring opening for maybe Luke Bryan. Luke Bryan or Lady Antebellum, it was one of the two.
Yeah. And I mean, you're going to see situations like that all the time, really at a lot of venues here in town. But I would say if someone's coming here and they're trying to just get that first foot in the door, Commodore Grill, The Local, couple other places like that would be ones to check out. Open mic typically doesn't happen. The Bluebird Cafe has a thing where you can go and stand in line on, I think it's on a Sunday, It might just be one Sunday a month. I'm not sure, but they have a thing where you can actually go and stand in line to audition to play the Bluebird, and it's kind of like an open mic style, and they do that on that Sunday night. But that's really the closest I think we get to necessarily open mics that I'm aware of. I'm sure somebody's going to watch this and they're going to live in Nashville and say, no, there's you know, another open mic somewhere else. But you know, Live Oak is another good venue for that kind of thing, for writers' rounds. There's a ton in town. I would say pretty much anywhere you go is going to have some sort of music component. Other than you're not going to find those sort of things on Broadway. Broadway is more of a artists that have been right. in town, that are ready to play a 4-hour set of covers most of the time, that kind of thing.
But I think part of the question there, and I just want to say this part because it is an education for the artist. Do gurus go to those things?
Most of the time, if somebody in the industry is going to a random round, it's because they're going to look at somebody specific, or they have an artist or a writer that's playing in those rounds. You know, a lot of times, the rounds that people in the industry are going to are rounds that are a little more established. It's not necessarily the ones that are just random. You know, like, or they're going to a showcase like Whiskey Jam is something that's set up here in Nashville that's done a great job of having a lot of artists on it. There's a lot of companies that do takeovers of Whiskey Jam, so you'd see a lot of industry people at those takeovers. But also, they've done a great job of just establishing themselves as an organization that is putting great artists out there and putting great artists on the stage. So, you know, industry folks will go there. There's some other writers' rounds in town that are specific, you know, rounds that are set up and more established, to where industry people know to keep an eye out for the lineups of those. And if they want to go see someone, they'll go check it out. But
that's such great information. It's solid information. It's very informative.
Yeah.
All on just a question.
Yeah, it is rare that you would see someone just randomly go and not have a reason to be there, unless they're just grabbing dinner or something like that. But most of the time, they're going to see somebody specific, or they're going for a specific round that has been set up to see what's going on, that kind of thing.
Okay, let me shoot you another question here. List these in order, most important to an independent artist. You ready? Agent.
Yeah.
Business manager, lawyer, manager, tour manager.
This is a good list for an independent artist. I think you could go. I'm going to preface this by saying you could ask 10 people this list, and they'd probably do it differently. I would say manager is up there for independent artists. Agent is definitely, I'd say manager and agent are like 1A, 1B, you know, for an independent artist. If you can get those two things, some of these other pieces can help fall in place. For anyone that doesn't have a manager or necessarily an agent, tour manager can be important, because they're going to be the ones that are helping you. Even if you designate somebody as sort of a band leader, in your band, if you're playing with other live musicians, that can go a long way, and just make sure they know that what you need them to function as, because that can go a long way towards making sure that everybody's there for a sound check, everybody's where they need to be when it comes time to perform. That can take a lot of weight off of the artist. Obviously, lawyer is up there as well. Having a good lawyer can help you avoid. Can help you get into some good deals, but the main thing is they can help you avoid the bad ones. I think that's absolutely. avoiding a bad deal is just as important as getting into a good deal. So
in a lot of the industry managers, this is one thing with the lawyers. Should it be any lawyer or a specific kind of lawyer?
You know, specifically you're hoping to have a lawyer that deals in entertainment, deals right. in music, because they have a different sort of mindset, a different skill set. You know, there's a ton of great entertainment attorneys in Nashville. There's a ton in pretty much any music city that you would have, LA, Atlanta, New York. I would say just doing your due diligence and making sure you feel good about the fit, and that you feel like they're gonna, you know, talk you through everything. That's a big thing too, making sure of that. Obviously, understanding that on the lawyer side, you know, you do have to pay for their time. You do have to pay for those services. So making sure that you have somebody that you feel comfortable with and you feel like they're really going to give you what you need is a big part of that. And then the other part on there
for references.
Yeah.
Just, mm-hmm. Yeah. Always.
Yeah. That's a big thing too. Ask who's using who, that kind of thing. I would say the other thing on there was business manager. That's obviously important. I think that becomes more important as you grow more, as you get a little larger, because you're just going to have more that you need to be able to manage in that area. Cause you got to understand, outside of the lawyer most of the time, and maybe outside the tour manager, you have manager, agent, business manager. They're all getting paid typically off of a percentage of what you're doing. So you want to make sure that the money that you're making is at a certain level to where you feel comfortable giving up percentages, because let's say just off the manager and agent alone, typically a booking agent is going to take roughly 10%. Manager is going to take, let's say 15% is the average. So any show that you're playing, that's 25% right there off of what you're doing. So you want to make sure
it's 10% for the booking agent. It's just going to be off of the booking, but the manager, that percentage comes off of everything of gross.
Right. Right. And that, you know, that's going to come off of everything. And then depending on, you know, what sort of label deal, if you have a label deal, you know, they might be taking a percentage of certain things too, outside of just the music. So it just depends on what deal you're in. That's where the good lawyer comes in, making sure that you're covered and you understand exactly what you're signing up for.
Yeah. Okay. Got one last one for you.
All right.
The simplest to say, but it might be I don't know. This won't be tough for you to answer. Do you have a go-to quote or mantra that you use that's motivational?
That's motivational. You know, I don't know how motivational this is going to be. One of my favorite things that I've heard, just in regards to the music industry, is Bobby Braddock was talking about that. I think it was Ray Charles told him one time that if you think about the music industry as a sine wave, right? So you're thinking about it as a wave. He said most people try to chase the wave to get to the top. They're trying to chase, you know, the success to get up here. And if you're doing that, then you're always going to be behind. He said, what you should think about it as is, if this is the industry, then you want to try to be a flat line in the middle of that wave. Because if you're doing that and you're staying consistent, then the times that it needs to, the industry is going to catch up to you. It's going to hit you and it's going to find you. Versus if you're always trying to chase the wave, you're always going to be a little bit behind the curve. So I think that was one of my favorite things that I've heard, you know, over the past few years in regards to the industry, is just making sure that you're staying consistent. You're figuring out who you are as an artist, as a songwriter, and doing that intentionally every day and trying to get better at whatever that is every day, then the industry is eventually going to catch up to you.
You, I knew when we did this, you'd be full of great information, and I'm extremely proud of you and all that you've done. I've just watched you grow so much. It's been incredible. And had I known all this, I'd have been nicer to you in the interview, our first interview together.
But, again, none of this would have happened if I wouldn't have got that first shot. So thank you again for doing that. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
And what you did in there is what every artist needs to understand. When you have that opportunity, you need to do everything you can to grow that opportunity into something, even above and beyond who you even work for at the time. You know, you have that drive. You can turn that one opportunity into several, and you've done that. And you have another great thing coming up that I just want to give a shout out real quick. I would like to say hello to your beautiful fiance, and you're engaged now, and congratulations on your upcoming wedding, and congratulations to you and Jen.
Yeah.
So I wanted to say that.
We're looking forward to it. Yeah, it's going to be fun. It'll be a good time, and hope to see you and Kermit there.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Hope to see you soon, even before that. So Thanks a lot for being with us today. Much love.
Thank you guys for having me.
And you've been listening to Local Music Somewhere. Ryan Cunningham is our guest. I'm Terry Hudson, and thank you for tuning in to rbeats.com. See you next time.
Always remember, with you, we are Our Beats podcasting crew wants to take this moment to thank you for listening to Our Beats Radio and Media Streaming Network.